Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 431. We're both back this week, which is wonderful. I'm Brian Cohen from the 5-Day Author Ad Profit Challenge, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media and the wonderful Reclaim Your Author Career Kickstarter.
Yay.
Which did I hear from you before we started that you've now reached over $18,000 raised from that Kickstarter?
Yes, you were listening, Brian. I'm very impressed.
Not all of us can, and I do mean men.
So. Yeah, we just passed $18,000 on the backers. So that's super exciting. It's just the number of people backing this is really heartening because, you know, you kind of work in the dark in your little quiet hovel, and then you put something out and you're like, we'll see what happens, you know, and then it's nice to know that all of your work has been put to use somehow.
Yeah. I felt the same with my Kickstarter campaign. And I definitely think that there's something to it where rather than you've put all this effort in and then you just put it up on Amazon, you see something like you, that first sale means something, hitting certain milestones means something. And the fact that Kickstarter allows for people to spend more money in a purchase rather than just one book and they get other things, it makes every little thing feel bigger. And it's a good feeling until you're really, really stressed about it.
Right. And I think Monica Leonel said something about the difference between launching a book and Kickstarter is when you do a Kickstarter, there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
And there really isn't. It's if you hide, like you can't, like you have to hit that goal and then it's just off to the races. So that's been really interesting because I love hiding, Brian. I love it. I hide all the time. I hang out with my dogs and hang out in my garden and hide from the world. So this has been a stretch for me.
Yeah, I think that that is a point I haven't even heard brought up that much. And I know you said Monica brought it up, but just like the no hiding, the public launch. And it's so funny because people will look at a sales rank on Amazon on a certain day and make judgments from that. But when they see a certain dollar amount, it's like a good or bad. It's like it's out there.
And they know how much you're making.
They know how much
the profit, right? Because there's a lot of expenses behind the scenes.
Right.
You're like, oh, this person has this much money flowing in. And it's, you know, it's these little things that I know I should be doing. Like we all know the psychology of if you put a human face on something, it catches attention.
Right.
So I'm like, I guess I'll put my face on this picture, you know, like just,
yep.
I'm here. This is the point, you know, get this to as many people as possible and you have to catch their attention first. I guess I'll put my face on this. And it is uncomfortable, but it's not a bad kind of discomfort. It's not like an injury. It's more like, you know, building up endurance.
Right, 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 right. And I think you get a little bit stronger at this as you go along, but I still had a lot of stress during my second campaign.
Yep.
But it's not all bad stress. Some of it is you stress rather than distress. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So there's a lot of good to it as well.
Yeah. And I did so much planning ahead. There's really not that much for me to do. So it's not like a burden of my time. It's just, you know, it's sort of a crash course in dealing with your relationship with money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which can be really good. If you're ready for that, knock it out.
Yeah, exactly. So that's obviously one of the big things you're working on. I've got my challenge coming up, starts today, Wednesday, July 13th, and got about 3,600 people registered for it. If you want to jump in there last second, it's at authorsadvertise.com. By the way, recently, I didn't get a chance to mention this on the show, but Amazon reached out to me and asked if I could do a short presentation, very short, about 20 minutes, about Prime Day and if authors could take advantage of that in some way. I mean, the short answer was most of the things you would do are before and after. But I did bring up the idea of using countdown deals during Prime Day to kind of evoke the Prime Day feel a little bit.
That good Prime feeling.
That good Prime feeling, Prime grade A feeling. And that was great. It was, I mean, of course, it's always flattering to have Amazon reach out and ask to partner in any kind of way. And so that was really cool. I should go hunt down that link somewhere. It exists somewhere. But yeah, that is always cool. And I'm glad to be recognized in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to thank the Academy. Okay. Huh. Should we do a show?
I think we really should.
Okay. Cool. So sad but true. Nobody answered our question of the week.
Here's what happened last week, y'all. If you missed it, I was hosting with our guest host, Nikki Haverstock, and I completely dropped the ball in my like Kickstarter brain. I completely dropped the ball on creating a question of the week. So I did one after the fact and we posted it. And surprise, surprise, nobody went and answered it. So these are some responses from the article. So the question
from the article.
Yeah. The question was, do you tend towards toxic productivity? If so, what are some of the signs that you notice and what do you do when you notice them? Okay. So these are just related to the toxic productivity. Roland Denzel said, I have, when my health coaching clients started to drop off in mid-2020, for some reason, it was really hard not to go for 100% productive, but that led to feeling scattered and unable to focus on the things that were still working, which I really like that. Do you feel that, Brian, a little bit?
Yes.
It's when the money dips that you're like, oh boy, let's deal with this.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Pamela Thibodeau said, been there, done that, and burned out more than once, which is why I'm making a conscious decision to take better care of myself.
Yeah, I mean, to answer the question myself, because obviously I wasn't here, is just I notice that I am expanding my day. I will try to work earlier than normal. I will try to work later than normal, ignoring the fact that I already work 8 to 9 hour day on most days. And I'll see it creeping into the weekend a little bit. And it's just not good. It's just not a healthy thing.
It creeps.
It creeps.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But thank you to, you know, the two of you fake people who answered the question of the week. You can answer the question of the week every week. So don't forget about us, please.
Please don't.
I want to stay relevant. All right. Let us go to the tips of the week. Would you like to start or go second, Claire?
I'll start, Brian. It's the least I can do after that question of the week blender.
Oh, that blender?
Blender.
All right, here we go.
And now on the Selmo Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Audio DIY FYI. Whether you want to narrate your own audiobook or become a professional narrator yourself, breaking into the world of audiobooks can seem overwhelming. But with the advances in technology and the increase in popularity of audiobooks, there's no better time than now to get started. Quote, there's a lot to learn, but recording your own audiobooks is easier than ever, says Draft to Digital's Sarah Quicken. In addition to a regular editor and proofreader, consider getting an audio editor too. A professional audio editor can make the difference between a polished audiobook and a book that is poorly reviewed or even rejected by distributors. As for equipment, you might already have everything you need, especially if you're on a budget and just starting out. You'll need a small, quiet space to record and eliminate echo. Converting a carpeted closet can be a perfect start. You can buy professional software or start with free software such as Audacity. Before you hit record, make sure you read through your book with the narrator's and reader's lens. And be honest, are you the best person to record this book? You don't want to spend a week recording only to discover your book would have been better off with a different voice recording it. Once it's recorded, edited, and polished, all that's left is to publish it using ACX and Findaway Voices. Unlike ebooks and print books, audiobooks can take up to 30 days to publish, so keep that in mind when it comes to launch dates. For more details on the process, stop by the Draft to Digital blog.
So, audiobook. Claire, you're running out to go do your own now, right?
I actually am for Reclaim your author career. I'm going to record the audiobook, and I have to set up a whole sitch in my closet because I don't have a carpeted room in this house. So we have to work with that.
Crowd the dogs around and
Yeah. Just come on, get in here, dogs. I need your fur. Just brush them and then I'd use that fur. That'd be fine. Yeah. So this is an undertaking. I'm going to be doing yet another thing that I have to learn. I just, you know, when you're like, can I just be good at something? Can I just master something? But I'm going to learn this skill. What about you, Brian?
Well, I recorded the audiobook for self-publishing with Amazon Ads. I have not yet. It was almost like the beta version went out to the backers, and that was out, and I got some good feedback about it. But I did also learn that there were a couple of errors here and there. And so we do need to go back and fix said errors. I also recorded it a little bit loud. I realized that, in order to make this work with ACX and Findaway, I'm going to need to kind of make a few tweaks here and there. I had taken this great audiobooks class by Derek Depker, who is a musician as well as an author. And so he's got a lot of the sound background stuff. And I applied the filters that are supposed to be applied for ACX, and it made everything sound really, really bad. So obviously but it sounds good without the filters. So I'm trying to determine, I haven't had a chance to sit down and probably looking at this article will help as well. But there's a couple things I did not quite do to code in the creation process. And so I definitely recommend doing a little snippet, sharing it with somebody who knows what they're talking about first, then going on and recording the whole shebang, because I didn't really do that. And hopefully I don't have to record it again. I would die a little inside, but I think I'll be able to make it work.
That's good. So what would be your first piece of advice to someone who's trying to decide on whether or not they should narrate?
I would say that you probably should have a certain number of sales before you consider making the audiobook, because you want it to be worthwhile. And a lot of people think that, if I create the audiobook, if I create the hardcover, if I create all these different editions, then I'll be making money. But usually the book needs to be have been making money first in order for success to follow.
Right. Yeah. And both you and I, it should be noted, are talking about nonfiction books as well. I would never in my life narrate one of my fiction books. That's why certain series just don't have audiobooks, because it doesn't make financial sense for me to make those, for me to pay someone to do those. And I would rather die than do one of those myself. It would be so embarrassing and such a hard time, and it would just not be worth it. So, but that's obviously me. If you have a background in this sort of thing, maybe, but yeah, I would say that it makes a lot more sense generally to do nonfiction, because it's you speaking directly to them and you're part of the brand, and letting them hear your voice can be a nice intimate experience with the reader. Mm. But so just making a note of that.
And my nonfiction book has fiction in it. So that has been fun. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it, but every so often I'm not trained in audiobook narration. And so every so often I forget the character's voice, and then I have to go back and fix it and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So. Awesome. Let's do tip two, author page positive. If you've been frustrated by the limitations that Facebook has put on author pages, there's some good news. Facebook has started to roll out the new pages experience. When you switch to the new page experience, you'll have a redesigned page layout that Facebook says is cleaner and more intuitive, but that also allows easy switching and navigation between your page and individual profile. When acting as your page, you'll be able to follow other public figures, brands, and partners to create a feed with topics that matter to you, similar to how your personal profile works today. One change that should be welcome to authors is the ability to interact as your author page on other Facebook pages and profiles. While you can't create posts directly on someone else's wall, you can comment on personal and page posts, interacting as your author page, in addition to joining groups that permit pages to join. Check out the post at the Meta Business Help Center for more information on all the new features. It was a bit of a slow news week. This was going to be, if we had enough, I was going to ditch it because personally, I don't care about this and I don't think it's all that helpful for authors. What are your thoughts, Claire?
Yeah, it's interesting. I just got a notification earlier this morning that one of my pages has been upgraded to this new pages experience. And I took the tour of it, knowing that we were going to cover this. And it was nothing. It was, I mean, I guess if you want to interact with your page, if you have a pen name and you want to be known by that pen name, that makes a lot of sense. I gave up on that a while ago. So, you know, that's my thing, but it could be useful for someone who needs to actually maintain that anonymity for whatever reason, to be able to interact and have those benefits. But if that's not the case, it's kind of, there's not much there.
The only issue that I see, look, pages are fine. They are what they are. You need them to run ads. But if you are trying to join a group with your page, they really, a lot of pages that join a group aren't able to do as much on that group. They usually don't get event notifications. Sometimes they're not even allowed to RSVP for events within that group. It's very hard to search for posts by your page in the group. We've run into all those problems in our groups for the challenge and for Author Ad School. And so we just recommend that people join us their profile so that they can avoid all of that stuff.
Yeah. And now you can go up to the, you know, the little top right of the screen and click on your image and it'll give you the chance to switch your profiles to your different pages. So then you can just use Facebook as that page. So that, I mean, that could be useful, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and that used to be a functionality it had, but it still runs into the same issue in groups. And groups are so much more valuable on Facebook than pages. So
yeah, I think that's really what's making me feel apathetic about this.
Yeah.
Is that pages don't do much other than just run ads.
Yeah.
I mean, I can post to a page that has hundreds of followers on it, I have one that's over 1,000 followers and get 10 impressions on the post. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know about that.
Same. All right. Tip number three, over to you.
Make or break connections. The key to successful book marketing is making genuine connections, says Penny Sansevieri for Author Marketing Experts. Quote, it's surprising how many authors start marketing their books without knowing who they are writing them for, writes the author. If you're writing fiction, this is particularly important because there are subgenres and tropes that can make or break your book, end quote. If you're wondering why your book isn't selling, Sansevieri says you're probably marketing to the wrong readers without even knowing it. And readers won't read a book they don't feel connected to. Once you learn who your ideal readers are, you can reach out to the right people and stop wasting time marketing in the wrong ways. Quote, I've spoken to authors who don't know their genre or have written for a genre that doesn't exist. That's like trying to sell your book to thin air, end quote. Finding your perfect reader market and building those connections will take some trial and error, but it will be worth it. Remember, quote, marketing is first and foremost about connecting, end quote.
Ooh, that's like trying to sell your book to thin air. That is an interesting metaphor, but it is very, very powerful in a way because that is the issue that the majority of first-time authors, even the majority of authors in general who've been doing this for a while, run into is writing for a genre that doesn't exist. And I'm glad that Penny posted about this because even though we continue to cover this topic, it still hasn't completely sunk in. So we need to keep doing it.
Yeah. And I think there's a difference between writing for a genre that doesn't exist and that you don't really know what genre it is, and actually combining genres in a thoughtful, purposeful way, like a genre fusion, or taking a genre and moving it a little bit forward. That's a different thing because the intentionality behind it matters because you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that We need to know the rules before we can break them. And if you don't read in your genre, or you write to something that is unlike anything you've ever read before or written before, without doing the research, you won't learn the rules so that you can subvert certain aspects of them for, as you said, thoughtfully and purposefully. And most authors don't do it thoughtfully and purposefully. They do it randomly because it is a little bit easier to just jump in. And then the claim is made, well, this is a book, you know, I'm an artist. This is the book that I need to write. But then they get very upset when it comes to selling that book. This is why we need to keep covering this, because the message isn't becoming clear enough that people are heeding our warnings.
Right. And sometimes, you know, authors will spot sort of a hole in the market, a really savvy author, and they'll go for it and they'll essentially start a new genre.
Yeah.
That is very rare. That is the outlier. So right. If you think that the book you're writing is starting a new genre, I beseech you, please think again. It's very unlikely.
Yeah. If you try to be like the top 1% of the top 1%, and you say, well, I'm doing exactly what they're doing, double check, triple check that you actually are, because they probably did not come at this in a haphazard way.
Right. But also, I think that trying to do exactly what anyone else does is just, you're doomed from the start, because there's so much that you don't see below the surface. Like there is, you don't know what kind of connections they have. You don't know their background. You don't know their skills. You don't know who they know, like how, you know, how much money they're actually profiting. You just can't know any of that. So you can say like, oh, but they did this, this, and this, these five steps. So I'm going to do that. Well, if you don't know the right people, if you don't have a natural skill for it, or if you just function differently in any way, there's a lot of chances that it's going to go off the rails. But that being said, you know, you can follow some things like tropes. You can build those in. So you want to get, you know, read in your genre, like we talked about and we talk about all the time. You can get sort of a general feel, an average, you know, what is the sort of center point of all of these data points, and hit that in your voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you put that very well. You need to read to kind of get the average, to get the baseline for the genre, but then you're going to naturally in your own voice tell it a certain way. So love that. Awesome. Here we go.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
What's up now? Wattpad is continuing to find innovative ways to reward writers on the platform, says Allies Dan Holloway. Wattpad's latest announcement is a new creator program that aims to reward writers who build an engaged readership. Quote, that is, readers who spend time reading your stories and keep coming back, says Holloway, who points out the similarities to YouTube's algorithms, which reward videos that keep viewers watching longer. The program will pay authors up to $25,000 based on the number of readers and how engaged they are. Payouts vary by genre, with minimums ranging from just 100 for a genre like horror to 9,000 for general fiction. Quote, the engaged readers feature gives writers a new metric to actually understand how people are interacting with their stories in the past year, said Wattpad president Gene Lamb. In addition, to make Wattpad more attractive for readers, they will be launching exclusive stories from some marquee writers on the platform, including Jessica Consolo, author of the With Me series, which has over 1 billion reads on the platform, and a TV series adaptation currently in the works. All right. So we've got Wattpad. We talked recently about how Wattpad had all this funding, but was not necessarily, like, we were comparing the funding here to KU numbers, millions of dollars a month. And now it seems like there is some money now happening. But I do think that it would be a positive thing for writers who are on Wattpad to be getting more money. I don't know. It feels a little bit nebulous, this whole engaged readers thing. What are your thoughts on all this, Claire?
Well, I'm certainly not going to start publishing on Wattpad after reading this. It wasn't enough for me, but it might be for some people. If you already have an audience, it's good to have these sort of things that you're like, oh, okay, maybe that's a goal I can shoot for. Yeah. But I would probably not advise many people to stop what they're doing and go over to Wattpad to try and earn these. This is probably something for people who've been there for a little while. And Wattpad is just, it's always been kind of one of those kingmakers where they just will pluck a few people out of obscurity. For a good example of how you too can make $1 million and have a billion reads and have a TV series adaptation in the works, which is not bad. That's the model. That's fine. But it's a little bit more like hobbyist, which I know a lot of listeners are. But I think as far as, you know, reaching as many people as possible with your words, I don't know that Wattpad is the greatest vehicle unless you decide to really commit 100% to it.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, like you said, with the Kingmaker comment, there have been a few people who had massive success on Wattpad, and it's easy, just, you know, like testimonials to point to this one person, this second person. But what is the average? What is the baseline? Are we seeing a lot of people on Wattpad get more discoverability? And it doesn't seem like the answer is yes, which is why we recommend proceeding with caution.
Yeah. I mean, do it if it's fun. It's a great place to just, like, you know, pick away at some little ideas and that sort of thing. Find some people. I think like years and years ago, I started putting some chapters on Wattpad of a book that I never finished, which is, I think, what you're supposed to do on Wattpad. But, you know, so I've checked out the platform. It's fun. But once I was like, okay, I need to make money doing this, that was not where I was putting my energy.
That makes a lot of sense. All right, let's go into number four, and you are up. Here you go.
Number four.
Optimize so they patronize. Patreon has long been a popular online platform for authors and creators to build online communities and additional streams of income. Quote, but how do you optimize your profile on the platform so that you entice existing fans, bring in new readers, and supplement your income at the same time? Asks Indie Author Magazine's Kasia Lisinska. To start, make the most of that first impression. Profiles without introductions turn away potential patrons. Quote, introduce yourself, your books, and your genre, says Lisinska. Quote, welcome visitors and let them know what you'll be offering should they become your patrons. In turn, share what their support means to you and what they're helping you achieve through their pledges, end quote. You also want to give your potential patrons options to choose from. Start with a $1 tier and build up to more expensive levels. Be sure to offer exclusive, extravagant, and expensive tiers for super fans too. Lisinska says it's important not to overextend yourself either. Quote, don't try to do too much. It's easy to get carried away and fill your tiers with all sorts of goodies for your patrons. But if you're not careful, Patreon can become a full-time job and eat into your writing and production time. It's often better to offer items that are already part of your process, but offered as early access, special editions, or together with insider information that doesn't require a lot of work for very little return. For tips on pricing, branding, and optimizing your Patreon page, visit the article at indieauthormagazine.com.
All right. So it looks like we're getting into the platform. This is the platform episode. Alternative ways to get the word out about your writing. Mm-hmm. This is another one. There's a few people here and there who are finding some success on Patreon. We gave up on it as a show because it didn't feel like we could, I know personally, it didn't feel like I could put enough effort into it. And I wanted to. And I felt like we needed a Patreon intern or something to really make it work. And I felt a relief from Patreon going away for us. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't for me. And I know some people like Becca Syme gets a lot out of Patreon and runs a lot of her business on, brings in a lot of her clients and whatnot through Patreon. So different people are going to connect with this model. But if you don't know whether or not you connect with the model, you've got to almost market to market and do the research. So what are your thoughts on these tips, Claire? What are your thoughts on Patreon in general?
I think it's an interesting option, especially for people who are very fan focused in their writing decisions and who really are good at building those communities. If you're a natural community builder or a natural community leader, I think this is a great place for you to set up shop, and you don't have to make much. I think this article makes a really good point of you want your Patreon to, by and large, be made up of rewards of things you're already doing. So that's like sort of the standard. And then you can, you know, if you get a bunch of backers, maybe you can do more because they're paying you enough to, you know, for your time. But I do know quite a few authors who do this as sort of like, you know, 50% of their income, right? Because you're getting a set amount each month. And so for me, I've always wanted to do one of these, and I set one up a while ago and then just never marketed it. And it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
But it's something I will eventually do, but my strategic mind has not yet figured out the best way to do it for what I'm going, you know, the direction I'm going in. Do I want to do it for my fiction? Do I want to do it for my nonfiction? You know, where am I even going to be in life a year from now? That's sort of the place I'm at. And so I'm like, it's that commitment phobia for me a little bit of, do I want to set up this Patreon, get people to pay me, and then I have to deliver consistently? That's hard for me because I don't work. I work in bursts. I don't work consistently. And that's just the way, I do it. I don't think it's ever going to change at this point. So, you know, how would I set that up to work with my burst energy is what I haven't figured out yet.
And that makes total sense. I think that as a strategic as well, I could not find a way to make it work with the way I wanted it to. And I think that I enjoyed Kickstarter more and have enjoyed Kickstarter more because of the one-off nature, the recurring always forever thing kind of turned me off.
Yeah. Exactly. There's one thing I'm going to do forever, and that's stick with my marriage. But even then I'm like, well, we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see what other patrons know.
Yeah. No, I mean, it just is not made, but I think if I was set up, like some of the people who are really successful at it set up, you know, mentally, like I can deliver this thing and it makes me feel good to do these things regularly rather than it stresses me out. And to have that security, like there are definitely certain, you know, Enneagram types that need more security than others. Mm. And that is a great option to look into for them.
No, that totally makes sense. We're not that Enneagram
security
type.
What's that?
Yeah. Woo.
How would All I self-destruct right. if I had security?
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, let's go into number three, and it's me.
Number three.
Serial survivor. At first, Kindle Vella seemed like a golden opportunity, says Dave Chesson of Kindlepreneur, a chance to make a name for yourself while there was less competition. But is that still the case? End quote. Over this past year, some authors have done very well on Vella, while others have struggled or even abandoned the platform entirely. The best news about Vella could just be the changes to the rules that were made over the past year. Initially, the requirements for exclusivity were fairly strict, which kept many authors away. But since then, the rules have been changed to allow authors to repurpose Vella content as a book after 30 days of being on Vella, meaning your story doesn't have to remain exclusive to the serialized format forever. If you've been waiting for the right time, this might be it. And Chesson interviewed over 20 Vella authors about how they found success on the platform. Rebecca Kenny said, quote, 850 to 1300 words is the sweet spot for episodes. Any shorter and readers feel cheated / disappointed. Any longer, you lose their attention. End quote. Lori Brandon said, What I've learned is that promotion is 75 to 85% of the work and writing is 15 to 25%. I know I've written a good story with compelling characters, but unless someone reads it and tells others about it, it won't be seen. And Nat Paga said, my number one piece of advice is to just keep with it. Vela is a numbers game, but it all adds up, end quote. You can read the rest of the tips over at Kindlepreneur. And some of those tips kept repeating with similar word count amounts, similar, you have to promote the heck out of it. I have seen some folks talk about Vela at the Writing Gals Facebook group. They talk about, some of the folks there have talked about using Vela. And so that's where I more often see people discussing it. But generally on like bigger groups, 20 books, even Wide for the Win, I don't see that many people talking about it. And so when I see that, it makes me assume, okay, there's a handful of people having success at this and most people are not, which is unfortunate, but hopefully these tips will help some folks. Claire, it's the platform show. We've talked about, I can't even remember. I'm like, okay, what was that first
we
one?
We have Patreon, Wattpad. We've been Wattpad. Talking about Kickstarter. Now we've got Vela. You know, when you read that Chesson's interviewed over 20 Vela authors, I thought it should say all 20 Vela authors.
Ooh, burn.
Ooh. No, I have no beef against Vela, really. It is one of those things that's not really talked about. I know there are some people who are still grinding, you know, on it and working away at it and getting some of those like bonuses that I don't know if they're still doing those, but for a while they were doing the bonuses, almost like all-star bonuses.
I think they still are. I'm pretty sure.
For Vela. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, that's where most of the money was coming from, not from the actual reads. So I think they're still trying to figure out, like Kindle Vela is still trying to figure out how they're going to make this work with the coins and everything. But you know, if it does take off, these people who have been doing it for a while and who have established long-running series with a lot of, you know, the social credibility are going to see a payoff.
Right. That first mover advantage.
Yeah, if you want to do that. But there are also other ways. So, you know, that are a little bit, roads a little bit more traveled.
Yeah.
For a reason. But, you know, if this is working for some people, great. I would love to hear someone who is like really killing it on Vela talk about it more in depth. I mean, this article is a good start, but just a little bit more in depth about what's going on over there and their opinion on whether or not it has growth potential.
Yeah. Let us know. We're here. Come see us.
We're here.
Come see us. All right. Awesome. Let's move to number two. And it's you.
Number two.
Mainstream shift. Recent book sales data is showing that there's a generational shift in attitudes towards LGBTQ literature, reports Porter Anderson on Publishing Perspectives. NPD BookScan is reporting close to 5 million units in 2021, double the previous year's sales in LGBTQ content, which includes LGBTQ literature in adult, children's, and YA categories. Quote, and so far in 2022, LGBTQ fiction sales have increased year over year by 39% through May 28th, says Anderson. The biggest increase came from young adult fiction, with sales growing by 1.3 million units over the previous year, with adult fiction growing by more than 1 million units. The trend continues in 2022, with sales rising 55% higher than last year. Kristen McLean, NPD's book industry analyst, doesn't seem surprised. Quote, the growth in young adult categories in particular mirrors a generational shift toward a more open and inclusive attitude toward gender diversity and sexual orientation, end quote. McLean suggests that the continued strength of the subject means there's an opportunity to expand LGBTQ themes and cross-pollinate with other high-growth areas of the book market. Quote, what was once considered a niche area of publishing is now becoming mainstream, with a number of titles leading the national bestseller list and books being shared across generations of readers. For specifics on genre and category successes, check out the full article on Publishing Perspectives indiepublishing.com. I feel like indie publishing is just so many years ahead in this.
So many years.
So yes. many. It's like, wait, what is this article from? When 2022? Like, yeah. What? That's kind of crazy. But what are your thoughts on this?
I'm absolutely in agreement with you. I think that this kind of article goes to show that indies are the trendsetters in a lot of ways, which we already kind of knew, obviously with more diverse fiction across the board. And I love it when more voices are heard. It is a good thing when more authors of diverse backgrounds are getting the opportunity to share their stories is a good thing. We do not want to, because the opposite would certainly be silencing those voices, which, hey, we kind of already did that for a while. And so it is great to see these themes getting expanded upon. I think that going back to, I forget if it was about a month ago, where there's the court case of certain books with LGBTQ themes.
getting banned from the bookstore.
Trying to get banned from the bookstore. And here we are seeing that doing such a thing would actually reduce sales. And so it's good to see, even though, yes, this is maybe behind the times when you compare to the indie movement, but to see these numbers and then put them against these court cases, because look, if you're Barnes and Noble, you have a couple things. Certainly you want to keep up appearances and seem diverse. And we've covered things on this show of them making mistakes in that area. So they want to, you know, of course, seem diverse. But when you look at the numbers too, because if it can be the sort of thing where, yes, Barnes & Noble wants to have this, the culture that they're trying to share, but also when the financials back that same culture, then it's a win-win for readers who want to be able to read these kinds of stories that that will connect up with them.
Yeah, I think it kind of blows out the out of the water the myth that this sort of literature is being pushed on people. This is being driven by demand. So it's not any agenda other than just profit. So yeah, I think that, you know, big publishers, they might be okay with pushing certain things, pushing certain, you know, pushing certain culture in a certain way, but only if it's profitable first. And it is profitable. And indies have known that forever, because indies who've wanted to read this stuff had to go out and write it themselves so that it existed, because it just didn't. So, you know, it's nice to see these bigger publishing companies get on the trend, and these, you know, retailers go, oh yeah, maybe it's not as niche. Maybe people who don't identify as LGBTQ also are okay or desire reading these, you know, like it's there. Maybe our readership could make us money if we just followed, you know, the trends. So it's nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah. 100% and agree.
I think it is a generational thing as well. I think there's definitely some generational shift there.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how long the Sell More Book Show will last. Hopefully it lasts an entire generation, but we're going to see this. We're always going to see, as generations change, as trends change, as people change, society will change. And that is going to impact the book world, because the book world is not in a vacuum. If things are happening in the world, it will impact sales, the types of books that sell. It will impact all sorts of aspects of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. When Riley is doing this show 30 years from now, we'll pass it down to your kid.
Wouldn't that be amazing? It's like the family business, you know, the family podcast.
Get in on that Sell More Book Show money.
Oh my gosh. There's money in the podcast stand.
Yeah. Always right. Money in the podcast stand.
Oh my goodness. Let's go into number one. Here we go.
And now the number one top five news item.
Do What I Didn't. authors can make lots of mistakes when just starting out, but that doesn't mean we can't learn from those who've led the way. By her own admission, Anne R. Allen has made plenty of mistakes and shares 10 of the best or worst, depending. The first is keeping your writing to yourself for too long. If you don't show your work to anybody, you'll never know how it stacks up to the marketplace or your genre. And if you don't get feedback, you'll never learn to toughen up and process criticism. Unfortunately, rhino hide is part of the job description, says Allen. Other big mistakes are not reading enough, particularly in your genre, getting to know your target audience. Quote, new writers should ask themselves, who am I writing for? Don't think everybody, because nobody can please all of the people all of the time. Believe me, I've tried this. It just doesn't work. If you're writing the kind of novel you like to read, then your audience is probably people like you. What do you like? End quote. Finally, it's important to learn just how the publishing process works, whether indie or traditional. Quote, learn the basics or you're going to be a ripe target for scammers. This is true.
Say that again. Put people in the back.
Yeah, learn the basics. It's not even only the scammers. Learn the basics because then you're going to know what the next step is for you rather than just being all over shiny object person. Mm-hmm. So like many, I studied writing in school. I had a creative writing major or a creative writing minor. And I think back to those days sometimes. Like I think back to some of the other people who were in there and people who were afraid to share their work, the people who were just terrified to have it evaluated. But that was so helpful to share it with classmates. And whether or not they had anything constructive to add, it's still a good idea to, at some point, get the words off of your hard drive, get them out into the world. And I didn't look at the other mistakes here, but I think not assuming that that first book will be good or sellable. I think that needs to be brought up here because too many authors forget this.
I think that's a safe assumption. But yeah, every book is going to be better than the next. That's the hope, right? That we get better with time. I mean, you go find your favorite author who's written, you know, dozens of books and you go read their first attempt and you, ooh, man, all right, well, this makes me feel a little bit better. Because that's just, writing is not something that we're born knowing how to do, telling a good story and sentence structure and stuff. It is a skill. So, but yeah, I mean, oh my gosh, those creative writing workshops in college, rhino skin, for sure. But it has helped, I would say, getting feedback. But what I would really encourage people to do, instead of like putting yourself, you know, like submitting yourself to one of those where it's just random people reading it and they give you feedback. I mean, you have a better chance of like walking across a highway without, you know, getting hurt. Like it's just, it's kind of a gauntlet that you don't need. Like we don't need to inflict pain upon ourselves. So what I would suggest is finding some people who have given you feedback on other parts of your life who may also enjoy writing and whose feedback you have appreciated and was delivered in a useful way, and creating a critique group with them. Because that is, you want feedback, but it doesn't have to hurt extra, right? Yeah. It doesn't, it's going to hurt no matter what, but it doesn't have to hurt extra when you're in that building of your skills, that, you know, sort of starting phase, if that's where you're at. And so then you can build up a little bit of confidence and understand like what is going on with your writing, where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are, before you put it out to anybody who is in a bad mood and just happens to pick it up and is not the target audience, which happens on the major retailers, because then you'll know what critique is useful and what may be about your writing and what is probably more about them and the day they're having. So that's the process I would encourage people to go through when it comes to putting your work out there. But you do need to get it out there in some way, shape, or form, even if it's just little short stories you post on Instagram. Like, just let it out. It's part of communication, and communication is a two-way street. There has to be a sender and a receiver. So your voice is valuable enough that it deserves a receiver.
I love that. That's awesome. So definitely make sure to check this article out and avoid some of these mistakes. We need a question of the week that hopefully someone will answer. I mean,
well, it would help if we added it to the show, I think. So yeah, maybe we should do that.
So what are your thoughts? This was the platform episode. So we could talk about platforms in some way. We certainly don't need to.
I think we should talk about platforms. Oh. I think we should talk generally about platforms. Like, what is a platform that has been catching your attention lately that you're interested in exploring, and why that one?
I love that. I don't need to change a word. So perfect. You can go with that one. You can answer the question of the week. Over at, I mean, there's places, Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group, the Sell More Book Show website at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section, wherever these people posted that I couldn't find that I'm going to get Claire's help with at the end, please answer the question. We would love to hear from you. And so we need a hot potato of wisdom. I was on, I think it was Patrick O'Donnell's wonderful Cops and Writers show, and he made me do a hot potato of wisdom. So it's spreading the wisdom.
Yeah, just among the Irish writers.
Yeah, I think it was a hash brown of wisdom.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, I know. I know. So do you want it or do you want to pass it?
I'll take it, I guess. It's been weeks since I've done any sort of culinary experiments with potatoes on this show.
Okay, good.
Okay. Mine would be my little bit of wisdom, which I'm coming to terms with this week, is really take a step back and figure out what sort of energy flow you have right now. And I know it can be painful, but try to adjust your schedule if necessary to that energy flow. Because if you try to do more, it's just not going to work. And it is what it is. So like what we were talking about earlier, I have to admit that I have bursts of energy flow and then I just need to stop and rest. And if that's not you, then don't stop and rest. If your energy is better off when it's a little bit every day and no breaks, then that's fine. But really tune into that and see how you can adjust your schedule to it. Because there's really no point in fighting. You lose. You lose when you fight that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't fight your body, your brain, your soul, your whatever. It's just not a winning battle.
Right. Like if you're resorting to like uppers to get things done, where, you know, you're not listening.
But if I push my body just a little bit more, I can get 1% more done.
Yeah. That eye twitch was always there. It's not the coffee.
Yeah. Get some quinine. Great wisdom, Claire. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. There's a Kickstarter with Claire's name on it at kickffs.com. So go back that thing.
Back that thing up.
Go back that thing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Love check it out. There's all kinds of stuff. I do want to mention that if you look at it and you've bought some of my courses or services before, so you like don't need everything that's in one of the premium tiers, you can back at a lower level. Like you just get the ebook and then any of the stuff you can shop individually for with the add-ons. So you can really build your own bundle, because it would be silly if I stopped here with the individualization and was like, no, only standard products. No, you can individualize it to whatever your needs are in the moment. So if you have any questions about that, y'all can just email me or leave a comment on the project and I'll help you out.
Love that. Awesome. And I've got my challenge, authorsadvertise.com. It launches today. So jump on in there, do the thing. And yeah, Claire, you have anything else?
No, I hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah. Hope the same here. And we'll be back next week for episode 432. And we hope you have a wonderful week of book selling, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling.